You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line from Austin, Texas is Trevor Labonte. Trevor, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Dave. Glad to be here.
Trevor, I read online something about you being blackballed as a musician. I want to get into that in great detail in a moment, but before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, can you give them a little bit of background about who you are?
I just am a musician that lives in Austin, Texas, and I've been playing music for a living since about 1999. I've paid all my bills and all my rent from just playing hundreds or thousands of gigs and just playing almost every night in Austin or all over the state of Texas. And that's about all you need to know for the context of this story.
Are you from Texas originally?
No, I moved here from Wisconsin. I was in school in Wisconsin, and I wasn't enjoying college very much. I knew something was wrong with the way that they were programming us, and I eventually kind of flunked out of school, and then I auditioned for Ringling Brothers Circus, of all things, in Minneapolis, and I got the gig and went on the road with them, and it was actually a really good gig, and it paid a lot of money, and I got to see the whole country, and I was owned by this multi-billionaire Jew named Kenneth Feld. And he decided one day after 2.5 months of sold out shows in New York City to close down the whole show, and everyone got laid off, and we had 5 days to figure out where we were going to live. So myself, along with a couple other musicians from the band, hatched a plan to move to Austin, Texas. And I came here and was goofing around on a guitar in a music store one day, not long after I moved here, and I got offered a job in a band. And I just have been working nonstop, playing all kinds of different music. I've played just about everything except a whole lot of classical or flamenco or anything, but I've definitely played a whole bunch of jazz and country music and rock and roll and just about everything.
Mm-hmm. How about like some Hebrew favorites? Do you do those too?
Like
Negila?
No, that's actually funny because I was in an Iron Maiden band that dressed like Hasidic Jews, and this was before I knew really about the Jews. I hadn't learned about them yet, but we dressed up like Hasidic Jews, and we had a really good Iron Maiden cover band called Iron Menorah, which I was fired from like I was fired from every other band that I was in.
Wow. Yeah, I'm familiar with Ringling Brothers because I have been there myself personally. That's Feld Entertainment. Did you ever find out why it was that they decided to just close up shop, even though it was an incredible success?
It was an incredible success in New York City, but in a few of the cities before we got there, I think that maybe they put the tent in a bad location or something. Ticket sales weren't that great and for a few of the cities. And so they just kept it a big secret that they were going to shut the show down, and they had even schedules hanging up for the next leg of the tour. But we went to New York, and we were right in Bryant Park, right next to the library there, right next to Times Square. And we played throughout the whole Thanksgiving, Christmas season, and almost every show was sold out. We played 13 shows a week, which is a lot, and we were all burned out. I got sick a bunch of times just from lack of sleep and from being in a disease-infested, bacteria-laden place. And we played our last show. It was New Year's Eve of the millennium, 2 blocks away from Times Square, and a bunch of corporate goons come in, and they had called a meeting, and they just laid off the whole show, and families were broken apart. I mean, the show had been on the road for a few years, so there was a guy from Morocco married to a woman from Britain, and they had a family, and the guy would get deported, and all I remember is we all got laid off. A lot of people were walking around crying in the hallway and stuff. We had 5 days to figure out what we were going to do, and I ended up down in here in Austin. It's kind of a crazy story.
Did they pay you everything that they owed you?
They gave us 2 weeks severance pay, which after taxes was not very much. It was actually a good paying gig. I made almost $1,000 a week, but my severance check for 2 weeks pay was like $1,100. And being that we had been in New York for 2.5 months and that there was a whole other leg of the tour, we went out a lot and we kind of blew through our money because I didn't want to sit in my hotel room when I was in New York City. They didn't want to jeopardize their organization, so they didn't tip us off that we were going to have to find a new life. So, yeah, it was kind of getting tripped up at the starting block. But
yeah, that sucks. But, you know, have you ever heard what the smallest book in the world is?
No, what is it?
It's the Book of Jewish Business Ethics.
Right. So I met this guy named Craig Berlin on Facebook, and he didn't like what I was saying. And he's a Jew, Craig Berlin, owner of Pro Tape Staff and Often. And he started creating these posts where he would tell people that I was an anti-Semitic, Holocaust-denying neo-Nazi. He told them that I was exactly like Adolf Hitler, except that in that I want to commit genocide against the Jewish people, but I only lack the means. There's so many lies in that statement that I won't even bother to try to unravel them. But anyway, he just carried out this big character assassination of me where he tagged everybody in town, 50, 60 people in each post. And I think he did it 3, maybe 4 times where he would tag everybody. And then sometimes he would just post about me and say all of these things. And I was blocked, so I wasn't able to defend myself. And he even got a radio DJ here named Andy Langer, who works for the radio station KGSR. He got him to make a post about me, and it had like over 200 likes and over 1,000 comments. I tried to find it. I think it's gone now, but I mean, it was like the whole town was playing out all these violent fantasies about me. There's about 10 or 12 of them, mostly the Jews, that were saying that I had fallen gravely mentally ill and needed to be placed on psychiatric medications and then be placed in an institution, which is funny because, you know, when you've never met someone in your life and they've never seen one of your quotes, but they're already delivering you mental health diagnosis.
Are there a lot of Jews in Austin?
I think there are actually, but and this was a group of maybe 10 or 12 that was kind of spearheading this movement to make community hate me. You know, starting about a year and a half ago, I started to get fired from all of my gigs. I don't know who was calling people, if it was directly Craig or somebody else, but I mean, people started calling all of my bands that were hiring me, warning them. It got really bad to the point where they were calling the venues where I was playing and making them cancel my performances like hours before. Yeah, I was subjected to this character assassination by a vindictive sociopath just for asking questions that challenged the narrative of the tribe, right, of the events of the past 80 years. What happens is they make a major strategic mistake when they do that. Like when you actively engage in employing others and denying someone their First Amendment rights, as well as intimidating current as well as future employers to deny you the ability to earn a living for merely exercising your First Amendment rights. It's actually tortious interference. You can take these people to court if you want. I recommend other people do this. I don't know if I'm going to do it yet. I think that what we need is like a big class action lawsuit eventually for all of the people that have been harassed for not believing in Jewish propaganda about 9/11 and the Second World War.
No, I agree with you 100%. I think that should be done, and there's discussions of it now. And as I said earlier to you, I was excited about talking to you, a young guy, not that I'm ancient. We need the younger people here to really understand the issues here that are at stake and how they affect the First Amendment, although the First Amendment applies to the government. It doesn't apply to private individuals, right, but they are choking the free discussion of topics. And you used the word tribe before, and that's important for folks to understand that for a couple of reasons. Well, the main reason is that the reason it's a tribe is because these people are all related genetically. That's why if I was an Ashkenazi Jew and you were an Ashkenazi Jew and we wanted to get married, we would have to actually have a series of genetic tests because there's over 20 genetic diseases that can be passed on. And the reason is because of inbreeding. So the fact is they're called a tribe because they are all related. That's why they look alike. This isn't saying that Jews are bad or just because they're all related, there's a problem with them. No, all we're talking about, you see, because this is how they attack when you talk about them. All we're talking about is the fact that certain members of the tribe, and I have a lot of Jewish friends, and then they attack that. Is, oh, you can't say that. Why? I can't. I'm saying it. I don't care what you want to say. I have a lot of Jewish friends. And I have several Jewish friends who are Zionists. But we still get along, and we get along because they respect not so much the First Amendment, because that applies to the government, but they respect the tradition of free speech in America. So these people are well-rounded enough to understand that. But there are a certain number of these vociferous, arrogant Jews who do the things that they do to you, and they do it to other people, and they're used to getting their way. One just threatened me physically not too long ago. That's in the pages of American Free Press. So this does happen. Unfortunately, it happened to you, and unfortunately, it's having an impact on your finances right now. But I wanted to ask you before we got into the latest event that occurred with Gilad Atzmon, who I have interviewed several years ago. He's a really cool guy. growing up in Wisconsin, and Wisconsin is a great state. I've been there plenty of times.
It is.
I love it. When I was in the Navy, I was stationed over for a little bit in Great Lakes, Illinois, and we crossed over to Kenosha, Wisconsin, because the drinking age was lower there than it was in Illinois, and that's a great city. I remember when we went over there, I think probably the first time, one of my buddies said, hey, they got more bars here in Kenosha than they do the number of days in the year, so let's see how many we can hit.
Yeah.
I think we got like two. One of the things that was so cool about Wisconsin is that I've never seen so many stars in my life as I had when I was in Wisconsin. Now, I don't imagine there's too many Jews out there in Wisconsin. So your experience with Jews or Jewish folks was not that deep when you were living in Wisconsin.
Not really.
Okay, so let's get to Gilad Atzmon, who I believe he plays the saxophone, right? Is that it?
Yeah, he plays saxophone.
Right, and he's from the United Kingdom.
Yeah, he's originally from Israel, but he decided that he didn't want to live on someone else's land, and he moved to England 20 years ago, and he gave up his Israeli citizenship and left Judaism and is not a Jew at all. He's a Gentile now.
Mm-hmm. And you know, that's such a rare thing you see, is a Jew with a conscience, a Jew even talking out against the stuff that they do to these poor Palestinians. That gets back to what we were talking about, the tribe. I mean, look, if I was a Jew, well, I can't say that because I don't know how I would think, because I would be embedded with that DNA, with those genetics. But I would hope that I would be able to put aside my Jewishness and say, you know what, I don't like how they're bulldozing these people's homes, or, you know, shooting them when they're outside playing soccer, or shooting a mom when she's holding her baby, or all the nasty stuff that these people do to these poor Palestinians. But he's one of the few who said, you know what, screw this. I don't want to be related to you. I don't want to have anything to do with you. And there's also a possibility that Atzmon might not be 100% Jewish. Who knows? Because they are a tribe, and they do move in lockstep, obviously. So there's a possibility he might have some Gentile in him.
I don't know how much it has to do with their genetics. I think it's all things that they're taught. But back to my landlord for a second. Now, when he would talk about the bulldozers and the destroying of the Palestinians' crops, he would laugh about it. So I tell people that this is like an integral part of my deprogramming, was meeting people that actually think this way in the real world. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't believe that anybody could be so wicked and tell such enormous lies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, besides the genetics, which I believe is an integral part of this behavior, besides that, of course, it's what they've been taught, that whole rabbi weird thing. The whole thing's just strange, as far as I'm concerned. And again, like I said, number one, this is America, all right? I'm going to say whatever I want. You don't like it? Turn me off. Who cares? I know you feel the same way. But number two is, I'm not saying this about every Jew. And sorry, I'm going to call you a Jew because I can. That's like you calling me a Christian, and I'm not a Christian. I'm no religion. But that's like you calling this person a Muslim. They even have a problem with you calling them Jew. Oh, no, you can't say that. You have to say Jewish. No, I don't. I can say Jew.
They identify themselves as Jews.
For them, it's okay, but you can't say it. But see, even something as simple as that, one word, Jew, they got a problem with it. You can't call me Jew. You have to say Jewish. Wrong. And so what you're doing is great, because like I said, you're young. You know, it's not great what happened to you. I feel bad for you, because I do know how they operate, you know, these vociferous Jews. As soon as you say something critical about them, especially when it's the truth, then they attack you. And like I said, I just went through this. I went through a physical threat with this guy. So Gilad Atzmon is coming out to Austin, Texas. Why was he coming out to Austin, Texas?
He was coming to the United States to do a tour, and he had already set up a show in Houston. But I called him like the day that I met you in Austin, because I was standing around talking to Mark Dankoff, and he told me that I ought to contact Gilad Atzmon, which is, you know, as if I hadn't thought of that myself 1,000 times. But I just don't, I would never thought to pester Gilad. I saw him as this famous musician, philosopher. But because I received the marching orders from Dankoff, someone that I really respect, I went straight home and I sent a message to Gilad, and I sent him a couple links of me playing, and I told him I was being blackballed for being anti-Semitic, and asked him if he'd ever heard of such a thing. Put a wink there, you know. Within 15 minutes, he had written me back, and he said that I sounded beautiful and that we would play for, and this was for certain, and that he was going to be coming to the United States soon. And sure enough, a couple of months later, you know, he says, I'm coming to Austin. Would you like to organize a couple of shows for me? And I said, absolutely. And I set up a show in San Antonio using some connections from a big band that I play in. Our big band put out an album a few weeks ago, and it debuted at number 33 on the jazz charts and went up to 20. And then it looked like it was on its way back down after that. But I was in a fairly popular band down there, and I used our connection to this radio station, KRTU, and Corey Cook got him to find a venue for us and to spin Gilad's albums and promote the show. So I added a couple of spoken word presentations to the beginning. One was going to be from Gilad, and one was going to be from this exiled Palestinian author named Jacob Nasser. And it seemed like as soon as they found out that there was going to be a Palestinian giving a speech, all of a sudden the venue pulls out on me 8 days before the show, and they say they're not interested. And then I get an email from Brian Chasnoff, who's a Jew that writes for the San Antonio Express News, saying that he wanted to interview me. So I called him right up and I gave him this nice interview, you know, knowing that just based on the fact that this guy has a Jewish name, that he's probably going to try to take all of my quotes out of context and stuff. So I spoke very carefully, tried to make sure that all of my quotes provided their own context. And I was talking all about the Israeli fingerprints all over 9/11 and the Kennedy assassination and just being really specific. And he printed this interview, this article, I should say, where he only used one of my quotes. He didn't bother to say any of the things that I was actually saying. He just had this one quote where he was trying to make me look bad, where I was talking about Hitler. But I'm sorry, I think that Hitler was a good guy in World War II. He was the one fighting against a war. He was the one tirelessly campaigning for peace, making repeated peace offers to all of his neighbors, doing everything in his power to avoid war. So the next morning, the article comes out and the headline is "Anti-Semitic Jazz Musicians Stir Uproar." And it was all about how, like, my event was canceled, which it was, and I just moved it to another place. But it was my first hit piece written in major media outlet. So I rescheduled our show for Brave New Books in Austin. And luckily, the owner, Harlan, at Brave New Books, is used to people calling his store and threatening them and stuff. So he stood his ground. And I wanted to point that out. This is an important thing. I really wanted this interview to be kind of about, or what part of their system of control broke down and allowed us to give our message to the audience. And it's just having somebody on the phone that won't back down to these people. Now, if it were me, I would be like, and if the ADL called me up, then I would just say, like, I think you guys are a bunch of Zionist criminals and I don't respond to threats. Give me your name and phone number. I want to know who's threatening me. Because if they call you up and they say, we don't like this show and we don't think you should have it, well, that's an implied threat, because they're implying that there's going to be some kind of consequences if you don't do what they say. And if they put any more pressure on you than that, then it doesn't really work, because then people start to ask questions. Who the hell are you? Who do you think you are? You know? So they call and they suggest to you that you cancel your event. And if you just are kind of expecting the phone call, what most people do is they just curl into a little ball and they do whatever the Jews tell them to.
Right.
Because they're terrified of them. But in this case, it didn't work. The show happened. There was no protesters, despite the fact that Craig Berlin tried to organize a protest. There was nobody there to protest it. Everyone was a no-show. And people all absorbed Gilad's message. You could see that people are just thirsty for the truth, and everybody wants to know the answer to the question, who are the Jews, which Gilad's book, The Wandering Who, answers. And so he gave his presentation, and then everybody lined up and bought his book afterward. The public really wants to know. So then there was a show the following day that they tried to get canceled too. And this time this was the actual ADL, not just Craig Berlin calling, Anti-Defamation League called Ovations. And in this case, the show didn't get canceled because we had a written contract and the check had already been cashed. Yeah, they tried to organize another protest. A guy on Jihad Watch. Dave, have you ever looked at the website Jihad Watch?
No, I never did.
Oh my gosh, it's like the most Islamophobic site, and it's obviously everything's written by a Jew. But in my case, I know that because of having this Jewish landlord, and so I know what Jewish Islamophobic propaganda sounds like.
Right.
So this show didn't get canceled either, and everybody bought copies of Gilad's book, and it just came down to having some people that didn't cancel the event just make sure that your venues are kind of in the loop, that someone might not like the things that you're going to be talking about.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the show's happened, fortunately, and you're right about everything you said about standing up to them. The whole idea here is for folks to not be afraid. There's nothing to be afraid of. To stand
right
up to them and let them know that this is America. If you don't like it here, go to Israel. Get the hell
right
out of here. This is America. This is my country. You're not going to infect it with that stuff. Out.
See?
Out. That's my view.
Right. There wouldn't be a problem if it was just people like me or you on the phone. But when I watch these other people, they just immediately capitulate, even people that think they're tough, you know?
No, you're right. There is, unfortunately, it's just a small number of people who will get to the point where you had to, where I have, where people we know have, the good people that we know, that will just say, no, 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 wrong. This is America. This is what we do here. We can talk about anything. Why is it that the only thing that we can't talk about is Jews? Wrongo. Out. Get out. We need tons of people who are going to do that. So anything significant happen after you played with Gilad?
Yeah, actually, I wrote a little piece called Impressions of My 2 Days with Gilad Atzmon. And if any of the listeners would like to see a little rundown, that's where all the entertaining anecdotes of the 2 days are in this thing, Impressions of My 2 Days with Gilad Atzmon. And then he interviewed me, and it's called The War Against Trevor Labonte. What Gilad did is had it published on like all these websites. It's on at least 16 or 17 websites, like Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust, CODO. It's on What Really Happened. It's on The Ugly Truth. It's on Gilad's blog. It's on Paul Eisen. He contacted all these people. It's on Michael Santomaro. It's on all these like revisionist blogs and other news outlets, worldtruth.com, and just a huge list of websites that picked it up. Gilad published Craig's, the name of his business, and the link to their website. Then the next day, I had a message from Michael Santomaro and to call him, and I called him up, and he said that he had spoken to Craig Berlin and that Craig's phone was ringing, people that wanted to know why he thought that he could get away with having this hate campaign against a musician and this character assassination, you know, calling not only him but his employees at this store and really being pissed off. I mean, could you imagine if every like revisionist-minded, nationalistic American saw your name and was told that you're a fanatical Jewish ethnic campaigner that was trying to silence people's right to free speech. So I don't even know what kind of stuff is coming down on him, but it was pretty brilliant, I thought, of Gilad to get that article published all over the place. And our goal was to score a tactical victory on behalf of all people that love free speech and that want to use it to speak out, especially against Zionist domination and the Zionist drive for World War III. And those kind of things are like the most important things that everybody should be talking about right now. And so if we can make some of their most vocal people back down, like Craig said that he wasn't going to try to bother me anymore if he realized that he had overstepped his legal boundaries. Like when you subject someone to a character assassination and actively engage in employing others and denying First Amendment rights and intimidating your current and future employers to deny you the ability to earn a living, this is breaking the law. So this guy is pretty much fearing a major lawsuit right now. We can stop people like him, then there won't be any consequences for people like us who want to speak the truth.
That's beautiful, Trevor.
I wanted to throw in one more thing, too,
sure,
if you don't mind.
Of course.
That in the whole process of this, I have never been harassed. I have never received a phone call from one of these people. They're scared of us. They don't want to debate with us. I actually offered basically the whole town that, you know, I would debate anybody anywhere about any of these topics. And there wasn't one taker. Everyone was a no-show. So on one hand, they're creating these posts and trying to make everyone hate me and turn me into this hate figure. And on the other hand, not a single one of them wants to debate. And so I have never been personally terrorized. What they do is they terrorize all the people around you to the point where they're all begging you to stop posting things. And I mean, my parents are terrified. All my former employers and other musicians they're all scared. I'm not scared at all, but they're terrorizing everybody around me. And that's one of the things that Gilad was so important for me that he helped me realize, because in my kind of self-centered perspective, I thought that it was just some guys and they were making some posts about me on Facebook and whatever, it comes with the territory. As I started to tell Gilad about it, he like was face smacking himself and just being like, oh my God, I can't believe how terrible this is. And it's because he realized that they were terrorizing the entire community and that that's what they need to be called out on, is terrorizing everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And you got so lucky having Gilad there on your side. He's such a cool guy. I know you know this. I'm just saying this for the listeners. He's such a terrific guy, and he's so sensitive, and he knows exactly what's going on. And
he's great.
Yeah, he is great. He's a terrific guy. What you went through, again, it's not good because you're hurting now for money. And I hope that some of these venues will grow a spine, a backbone, and, you know, say, what's more important, the United States or a couple of Jews who don't want the truth to come out?
Right. I'm not that worried about it. I'm going to be able to rebuild, no problem. One of the big problems is just being so obsessed with keeping tabs on all these like lies that are coming out in the Jewish media. It's like a full-time job just trying to debunk all of their lies. So I kind of have a pretty bad addiction to just my Facebook page because I've got like 3,300 friends from all over the world. I'm supposed to be this racist neo-Nazi, right? But I've got like 35 friends named Mohammed, and I've got friends from all over the world, and we're all saying exactly the same thing. Since the problem has been kind of solved now, I can go ahead and start sending emails with clips, you know, to these different clubs and stuff to try to rebuild. I'm not really that worried about that part of it. But Gilad, he thinks very tactically, and this is something that he said to me that I'll give you some things that I learned from him, because he was in the IDF, which I call the Israeli Occupation Force, in the early 1980s and was involved in Lebanon. So he understands battle, and he realized that what was needed was some kind of plan to make this guy shut up. And, you know, I was just letting him go off. I mean, my strategy is to let the Jews behave like Jews in front of everybody. And yeah, maybe 20 or 15% of people will buy into their propaganda, but everyone else will just see them as this annoying, fanatical person that's maliciously lying and trying to harm another person's life. I mean, their goal, I guess, is apparently to make me homeless or make me commit suicide or something like that. But I actually enjoy fighting against these bastards. Maybe I'm just a crazy person or something, but
you're an American, and that's good.
Yeah,
that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to fight when people attack you for no reason.
Yeah,
that's excellent, Trevor. I'm glad it happened to you. Like I said, I'm not glad because it's hurting you in the pocketbook. I'm glad that it happened to you because you're fighting. I'm glad that you're going to bounce back. I'm sure you will. Trevor Labonte, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners, and looking forward to talking to you in the future to get some updates on how this whole thing unfolds.
Gladly. Thank you, Dave. And I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and be on American Free Press.
Joining me on the line is Gilad Atzmon. Gilad, thanks for joining us today.
I'm very happy to be with you.
Gilad, I spoke with Trevor Labonte a couple of days ago about an incident that happened out in Austin, Texas. You were there. I want to get into that in detail in a moment. Before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, can you give them a little bit of background about who you are?
I'm basically a jazz artist. I'm a saxophonist, a composer. I'm playing all over the world. I'm also a writer. I wrote two fictions, and in the last 10 years, I'm writing extensively about Jewish identity politics and power. I find this subject fascinating, and as my readers know, I am very, very critical, not just of Israel, but of all this matrix of violent power that I believe threatens world peace on a daily basis.
And you are from Israel?
I was born in Israel, pretty much patriotic upbringing. I served in the Israeli army. I'm not an Israeli anymore, and I'm also not a Jew anymore.
Out in Austin, Texas, this disturbing event has been unfolding. How is it that you ended up in Austin, Texas?
It's quite simple. I've been visiting America in the last decade quite a lot. I really love being in America. I'm a jazz artist. And I gave a lot of talks in America about my writings. I jammed with a lot of American great musicians. And 3-4 months ago, I got this email from Trevor. I didn't know him. I didn't know of him. I didn't know anything about him. And he wrote to me, "Hi Gilad, I love your writing. I'm a jazz musician. I was very successful here. And then I've been subject to intimidation, harassment campaigns, and so on. Due to my writings, due to my thought, due to the way I express myself, I don't remember exactly what he said. And they basically blocked me completely. I am left with no work. And I'll play with you," is what he wrote. And I get a lot of emails from people who like to play with me. So I checked him out immediately, which is something that we couldn't do 10 years ago. But with YouTube and, you know, internet,
sure,
and clipping, you know, I immediately realized that the guy is a wicked player. He's a really, really good musician, top standard. And I wrote to him immediately that I would definitely accept his invitation. And by the way, I would play with anyone. I would also play with a Jewish settler, obviously not in a settlement and not in Israel, but I don't really care what views musician hold. If they are great musicians, they are, for me, superb human beings. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I obviously didn't have any reason to believe that Trevor held any positions that would be embarrassing for me. And we left it there. We organized this one or two concerts. But I really didn't understand the scale of the campaign against him. Considering this guy being, you know, one of the really best guitar players you have over there, they left this guy without a single job. They intimidated his friends. They put pressure on his family, on his girlfriend family. I've never seen anything like that. I obviously been subject to harassment for, I don't know, 12 or 14 years. But I don't know, somehow with me, they've never been that successful. But with Trevor, they managed actually to isolate him through this intimidation campaign. When I was in Austin, I learned that the guy that stood in the center of it is this Craig Berlin. He even called the venue where I played and gave a talk and present himself as a Craig Berlin, the owner of, I don't remember what is his shop, tape, audio. You have the name probably there.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. He presented himself in the name of his business. And he told the guy in Brave New Books, and the guy told me, that, gave me the details. He told us that he is from that and that business, which is something to do with audio or copying or whatever. And he knows everybody in the music scene. So he basically used his power within the studio industry or whatever music industry in Austin to destroy Trevor. And now, since then, I also told Trevor that he has to be slightly more sophisticated in the way he handled his case. Because I think that, you know, shouting and fighting on Facebook is exactly where they want you to go. What is Facebook? You know, the only thing that they found out about Trevor, you know, this is what I found when a journal from Texas called me to question me about it. They asked me, Gilad, how do you justify the following question? And the question that was raised by Trevor, he said, if Hitler was a dictator, how do you explain the fact that he was supported by the vast majority of Germans? Now, the fact that Hitler, after the election, in the election he won just 31 or 32%, but once he held power, he became extremely popular. The question is legitimate, and instead of dealing with the question that he raised, they just decided to silence him. Now, this is something that we are used to in the Talmudic universe, and it's quite upsetting to find out that the Talmudic universe is so dominant now in America.
Yeah, unfortunately.
No, but anyway, I told Trevor that I don't think that being engaged in a Facebook constant rant is the way forward for him. I thought that he wouldn't get much more attention if he start to write proper pieces on a proper website and start to circulate his ranting. Because what it is really, Facebook is a Jewish invention. It basically created a lot of synagogues, and we're all talking to our friends. And what they want to do now, they want us to impose on us this rabbinical system that we censor ourselves. You know, there is a guy, you may know the name, a uniquely stupid guy. His name is Steve Randall. He's kind of apparently part of this FAIR organization, which is a kind of Judeo-centric censorship apparatus. And he writes to me all the time on my Facebook, "Oh, look at all these people, Holocaust deniers, how do you allow it?" Basically, what he wants me to operate as a censor, as the, like the, what the Guardian is doing here to the left. By the way, they were successful for a while, but that's it. The tide has changed. I've never done it, and I will not do it. I'm not into that censorship. I'm a jazz musician. Freedom and intuition is, for me, the most exciting human feature.
You went out to Austin and you played with Trevor and you had a great time.
I played with Trevor and I had a great time, and I took him with me to Houston and he played with us, and he's a fabulous player. He's a fabulous player and a fabulous human being. And I lent him as much support as I could.
That's very nice of you. I know he was very impressed with you that you even got back to him, he told me, in the email right away, and that you gave him the support that you did. And
oh, no, this is, you know, by the way, I told him, and we were laughing about it, the fact that I am operating as such is not because I'm a human being. It's actually because I'm a, sorry for, excuse my French, it's because I'm a fucking Israeli, you know? When you're Israeli, the first thing that you train you since you kind of managed to pronounce your name is that you don't leave anyone behind. This is the Israeli as opposed to the diaspora Jew,
mm-hmm.
you know? The Israelis, look what they did for this Gilad Shalit, mm-hmm. who was actually basically a clumsy soldier.
Right.
Who, you know, fell, didn't even fight.
Yes.
They went out of their way to bring him back. And when I saw that there was unjust done to Shamir, Israel Shamir, I went out of my way to help him. And I did the same to Paul Eisen. And I did the same to Trevor or to anyone else. And I was shocked to see that when there was this Palestinian joker, Ali Abu Nima, attacked me, so many people stood up for me. So the Jewish left always use the word comrade or comradeship, camaradership. But I've never seen them performing anything that can be related to the signifier. For me, to have a camaradership, if this is the way to pronounce it.
Yeah, you could say that, or camaraderie.
A camaraderie is the willing to sacrifice for your friend. And I'm good at it. I don't know any other way.
No, you're great at it, Gilad. You're a great man. Thank you for everything that you do. What is your website for the listeners?
Gilad.co.uk. Gilad.co.uk. If you want to read my thoughts, just click on writings.
And your latest book is The Wandering Who?
The Wandering Who, yeah. Still causing problems.
Good, excellent. Gilad, thanks so much, my friend. Great talking to you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye, mate.
All right, Gilad.